Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and we are in really the final days of a countdown to transformation. That's how I see it. And it's a time where not just our planet, our solar system, our galaxy is coming into a divine alignment. And my guest tonight has been studying this time of transformation. She's been through her own transformations. She's one of the great authorities on the codes of ascension, where we are moving as a planetary race. She has tapped into many levels and dimensions. We will be talking to my good friend, Tricia McCannon, tonight. Welcome, Tricia.
Hi, Alan. What a pleasure to be with you and our listeners tonight on the show.
Yes, and I just want to tell people, if they are in New York this coming weekend, Friday, November 30th, and Sunday, December 2nd, Tricia will be doing a workshop at the Meta Center. And what's the best website to tune in for that, Tricia?
Well, really, I think the thing to do really would be to, the New York Meta Center, if they simply Google New York Meta Center in New York, that's where the event's going to be held on Friday night and also on Sunday. And those who are interested in registering can either call me directly or can call you or can call, actually,
yes,
Andy Kane, who is handling a lot of the registrations.
Well, I'll give those numbers at the end, but let's get them excited about going to the workshop.
Yeah, actually, it's going to be an amazing workshop. As I think I may have told you this summer, I travel and teach and speak all over the world, much as you do. And the last couple of years, because we know that 2012 is a very big portal of transformation, I've actually been speaking about the science behind this, which means the geophysical changes, the astronomical changes, what the masters and the ancients within the mystery schools had to say about what's coming, how this affects us at a personal level, at a planetary level.
Well, let's go into that right here. What are some, let's just talk about the geological and the galactic changes and alignments and how that will then affect the spiritual and personal. So what's happening geologically and galactically?
Well, the big question. At the scientific level, what's actually occurring is that the poles are shifting. There is going to be a pole shift in our lifetime.
Let me just interrupt. When you say the poles, do you mean the magnetic poles?
I'm going to address that. Believe me. We already have a magnetic pole shift that is occurring. So there are two different kinds of pole shift. There's magnetic and there's geological. And it's possible that we may have both of them. The North Pole has already shifted some 9 degrees towards Siberia. And it is still in the process of shifting, which means that places like Atlanta, Georgia, where I am, are becoming warmer and more temperate. And places like, of course, Siberia are getting 18 feet of snow, which is pretty much uninhabitable. So, how we know this is happening and why it is happening is what I'd like to, just take a couple of minutes to explain.
Well, also, just to support that, there are some airports that have now realigned their runways because of this drift of magnetic north. So it's really a concrete fact. You heard about that, didn't you, Tricia?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This has actually been going on for the last 20 years. You're absolutely right, Alan. And when we begin to talk about changes, geophysical changes, this conversation takes many different aspects. There's a astronomical level, a geophysical level, a magnetic field level. In short, let me just kind of speak about how these cycles work. Just as there are 60 seconds in a minute and 60 minutes in an hour and 24 hours in a day and 30 days in a month, those are smaller cycles. When we begin to talk about the larger cycles that govern these changes, we're talking about something that the ancients call the precession of the equinox. Now, it's not a procession, which means it goes forward. A precession means it goes backward. And this is a 26,000-year cycle where slowly the celestial background of our sun rising every spring on the spring equinox shifts backward. or at least from our point of view, it appears to shift backward.
You mean it's right now 0 degrees Aries is the rising sun of the spring equinox. So it is moving into Pisces. Is that what you're saying?
No, actually, we've been in Pisces, and it's moving into Aquarius.
Okay, I get that.
Each one of these ages is about 2,160 degrees. And if we just kind of imagine so that our listeners can kind of follow this in very simple but clear physical terms, what we call the zodiac is a 7-degree band that is the flat plane of what's called the ecliptic, and that's the flat plate that all the planets in our solar system go around on. And if we took that 360-degree circle of that flat plate and we divided it into 12 equal portions, we'd have what are called the 12 signs of the zodiac. And so when we look in the newspaper, for example, to see what our zodiacal sign is, you know how it goes Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Cancer. That would be a procession. A precession is where it appears to go backward. So during the time of the Roman Empire, for example, Alexander the Great, for 2,000 years, we were in the age of Aries, the god of war. So we had lots of wars, and more wars. When Jesus came in, it had already shifted probably about 100 years into Pisces. And so he came between the change of the ages, between Aries and Pisces. And, of course, his message was the kingdom of heaven is within, love your neighbor as yourself, forgiveness is the key. These were classic Piscean messages about unconditional love and the oneness of all of life. And then, of course, we began to move. For the last 2,000 years, we've been in Pisces. And sort of the good news about Pisces is unconditional love, and the bad news is the Inquisition, because Pisces in its exalted form is very much the Christ consciousness, and in its, less exalted form, it becomes the victim. And really that transition from Aries to Pisces was the hardest one to make, because you have the warrior energy of the Roman Empire that became sort of oppressive, really, to the softer age. So we had the Inquisition. So now we moved 0 degrees into Aquarius in 1939.
Wait, 1939? Like that was the beginning of World War II. Right.
Well, actually, let me just kind of ground this. There's a lot of discussion about exactly when we will enter the age of Aquarius. We know that when we do, the age will be about 2,160 years. There's roughly 30 degrees in every sign. And it takes 72 years of our years, Earth years, for us to move 1 degree. Theosophists like Madame Blavatsky, Rudolf Steiner, Alice Bailey, some of the mystics, Manly P. Hall, from the 1920s and 30s, talked about the fact that we moved into the first year of 0 degrees Aquarius, that pivot point between Aquarius and Pisces in 1939. So if you add 72 years to that, it completed in 2011. So 2012 actually marks the first year of 72 years of us being in 1 degree of Aquarius. And the age of Aquarius, being an air sign, is all about communications. It's all about space travel, extraterrestrials, computers, fax machines, cell phones, super technology. And
the symbol has always been these waves, but it hasn't been water waves, which a lot of people would mistake it to be. It's these waves in the air. And how did the ancients know that? But they knew it because the cycles of time are encoded within the total soul of the world.
Yes, and they had repeated. Even though we only think history started, 3,000 B.C. or something, in truth, there has been human history that's gone on for many, many, many thousands of years. And And so, of course, this was recorded. And as you know, the image of Aquarius is a man or woman pouring down the light of heaven from the galaxy. And it looks like water, mm-hmm. but it's really consciousness. It has to do with attuning with higher consciousness and bringing in the wisdom from the stars or from the galactic center. And, in fact, now we get to the actual logistics of this time clock or the science. We don't just go around, you know, the galaxy every 260 million years in a flat plate like a record player. We actually go up and down as an oscillating sine wave. Mm-hmm. And so these
When you say up and down, we're below the galactic equator and then we're above the galactic equator. So at this point we're sort of even with the galactic equator, aren't we?
Yes, what's happening is the cycle actually starts when we cross above the galactic equator, and so for 13,000 years we go up like a big hill, and then we slowly come down, and then we cross below the galactic equator, which is really what happened during the fall of Atlantis 11,500 years ago. And so it took them about 1,000 years or 1,500 years to really move through the galactic center, and then Atlantis fell, and we literally fell into the third dimension, and we kind of fell asleep. And it wasn't just all at once. It was even though there was obviously a big flood, we have this in hundreds of cultural histories around the world, you know, there were still civilizations that that survived and that passed on knowledge. But slowly, as we came down to the bottom of this curve, we really have fallen asleep, and we've forgotten a lot of this knowledge. And now, of course, in our lifetime, in the last 100 years, science, mathematics, astronomy, all the, you know, from healing and medicine, all the sciences have begun to come up again. We've begun to have shows like Your New Realities on, people like myself and you talking openly about this kind of knowledge and bringing it back to public awareness, and it's being corroborated actually by hard science.
So, Trish, my theory is that, yeah, we're moving above the galactic equator now, or even with it, and what is affecting consciousness is the light information, the flow of new cosmic radiation that's affecting the expansion of our neurology. And so I think that's what is contributing to this expansion.
I think that's very well said, very eloquent, because mm-hmm. what actually happens is it's a 900-year window. And what December 21st of 2012 marks is the midpoint, 450 years into this window. And, of course, we started pulling out of the Dark Ages about 450 years ago, something like that, thank goodness. And with the advent of science and some of these things being reborn. So what actually happens in this time of alignment is that the galactic center of our galaxy actually goes off. And this is these are images that have been found by the Hubble telescope, where you literally see a gigantic column of light rising just like a pillar into the heavens and below the center of the galaxy, like the Tree of Life.
Wait, slow down. It goes off. I don't actually know what you mean when you say.
Every 26,000 years, it appears that there is some kind of an explosion in the center of our galaxy.
And have they detected that at this point? Have the scientists?
Yes, in fact, this is one of the most amazing photographs that NASA has come out with. Most people know nothing about it. It certainly should be on the news. But we are now seeing this, let us say, kind of explosion, which creates this gigantic pink plume going vertically above our galaxy and below our galaxy, creating a cosmic cross.
I have seen that, and they can't really explain it in scientific terms, can they?
Right. Well, what's happening, of course, is this is what the Mayans would say, that let us say there is a sun at the center of our solar system. There is a sun or a great central sun at the center of our galaxy, and then amidst all the 3,000 galaxies that they had detected as of just a few years ago, and I'm sure there's more than that, there's probably a regulating great central galaxy at the center of the group of galaxies they were in. So what the Mayans say is that this is not just a planetary event, it's not just a local solar system event, it's actually an event that is affecting many different galaxies. So obviously the great central sun sent out almost like a relay signal to other galaxies. And it's not just our galaxy, by the way, that's going off like this. They photographed several other galaxies that are having this same explosion happening.
I see. And that is interesting.
It's like a radio signal going out from the central computer, and then it gets relayed through light frequencies, exactly as you were saying, to the suns in that are aligned with this. And our solar system is a solar system that is entrained within this 26,000-year cycle. So what happens, of course, is like new frequencies are being broadcast into our sun that are then being broadcast to the Earth. Now, what's interesting is the Russians have discovered that light transmits information. Mm-hmm. The Russians have done some amazing experiments where they found that if they sent a coherent beam of light into, let us say, a salamander, and from a salamander into a pregnant frog, the pregnant frog, instead of giving birth to little frogs, gave birth to perfect salamanders.
Really? That's an incredible experiment. That's amazing.
So what they're finding is that this coherent light picked up the DNA information or blueprint from the salamander, and in the forming nucleuses of the biological matter, the eggs of the frog, it encoded and stamped it with this new template. So instead of, and that template overrode the biology of the frog. And when they've done this with a duck and a chicken, sending it through a duck into a chicken, the chicken gave birth to half duck, half chicken. And
wait, so let me see if I, wait, I just want to absorb that information you gave me there. So they sent a light into, like, say, a chicken, and then sent that same light into a duck, you're saying?
No, they took a coherent beam of light and they passed it through a duck, picking up the duck's imprint of its DNA into a chicken. And the chicken, of course, was incubating eggs. And so what it did was it imprinted the forming embryo inside the chicken's eggs with a different form of DNA, the duck's DNA. So what was born to the chicken wasn't a true chicken, and it wasn't a true duck. It was half duck, half chicken.
So you can, they, science explains this by saying information is encoded in light, and that light is picked up in the biophotonic capabilities of our cells. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Another way I would look at it would be that as this new information is being broadcast to our sun, it is sending new frequencies into all the planets in our solar system, not just ours. And this has the capability of creating, let us say, genetic changes or genetic upgrades in many different species, including ourselves. Now, this gets into some information, you know, that theosophists have talked about the different root races. And they believe that each root race, let us say, has been the experiment of a particular age. The Mayans, for example, talk about four previous ages. So do the Hopi. And at the end of each age, there was sort of a something that destroyed that age, but humans did survive, and so did animals, and we started again. But this time with a sort of a new element that was added to the planet Earth and to the human equation, creating a first root race, a second, a third, and a fourth. And so we're ending, according to the Mayans and the Hopi, the end of the fourth cycle. I think the Aztecs think that we're ending the end of a fifth cycle. But be that as it may, whether there were four previous cycles or five, you know, they're saying that we're at the end of a cycle. Now, at the end of each cycle, what happens is that all the consciousness of everything that's ever happened on all the planets in the solar system, everything you've learned in all your many lives, all the many things that all of the souls on this planet and any other, if we had any other inhabited planets on this in this solar system, that information or that wisdom or that spiritual evolution is uploaded to our sun. And our sun relays it to the galactic center, to the great central sun. The great central sun sends down a new set of codes that says, okay, you know, we had an evolutionary experience, an experiment with these set of variables to see how the souls down there did given these gifts and abilities and capabilities. Now, you know, let's try another experiment. We'll add another element. This brings us to the whole conversation about crystal children and indigo children, which are these children that have been being born in the last, you know, 10, 20, 30 years, or maybe some of them even earlier, that have more psychic ability, more spiritual healing gifts. They seem to be more holistic in their thinking and less linear. So mm-hmm. these are sort of the forerunners for the possibilities for humankind to take its next step in evolution.
Okay, let me just ask you a question, because it's a question I've been thinking about and sort of asking people, and no one has really been able to explain it. So we have the galaxies, we have the stars, we have the vast reaches of outer space. That's the material universe. And then we have this interior universe, this thing called consciousness, right? And I haven't been really able to understand that bridge between the vastness of space and all the galaxies and all the light years and millions of light years and stars and who we are as individual soul beings within the vastness of that space. So you know what I'm asking? How do you bridge those two in a logical, scientific, or maybe not logical, but in a way that we make sense of both of these aspects of existence?
Well, let me say, I think that you're asking very deep and penetrating questions, and there are many responses that come to mind. I know we have a lot of material to cover, but I'll jump into two or three things that come to mind.
Yes,
please. You know, as a clairvoyant, I've read for over 6,000 people around the world, and I was born with the gift of sight. When I was a child, I would see fairies in the forest. I would see angels. I mean, from the time I was about 8, I had, you know, I could see elemental devic spirits in the forest. And when I was about 8 years old, I lived across from a great forest. I saw these elementals, and they're like the guardian angels to the plant kingdom. And I think they were very surprised that I could see them, because humans don't see them normally. And so they sent the angel that was the overlighting angel of that forest to come and talk to me. And he came when I was 8 and began to teach me about the vast chain of being, or the vast chain of worlds and dimensions, and how the light is stepped down from the higher levels, almost like a big funnel, getting more and more and more narrow or more dense, to eventually where we come to the physical world. And, of course, you know, in my adult world, as someone who teaches the mystery school and speaks on many of these aspects from the great spiritual mysteries with the masters, we can call this now the Kabbalah or the Tree of Life, which basically is teaching the same exact concept, that that God, the One, or the infinite creator of the all, when it awoke in its from its slumber, whatever that would look like. And, of course, we're having to speak about in metaphor, because when you start talking about something that's so far beyond the mind, you know, all we can do, the best we can do is use metaphor.
Right, because it's so abstract, these ideas and the states of consciousness that encompass these ideas, that we just have to use these metaphors or very limited examples of something quite infinite. So, yes, please.
So this one decided to, you know, if just think about it. If you were the one and only for all eternity and there was nobody else, what would you want to do? You'd probably want to have company or entertain yourself or learn in some fashion. So the one split itself in two, as the Divine Father, the Divine Mother, who are, of course, joined, and this is the first Trinity, you know, and as you know, I work very much with these profound beings, the Ariel, the Divine Mother, and, you know, there are many names for the Divine Mother. She has many names, and, you know, as she was known in Egypt as Isis, she has 10,000 names and 10,000 faces, because she comes again and again and again and again to the world. And then the Divine Father energy, who I call Rigel, but other people have called this divine and benevolent presence many things.
How is Rigel doing? I know you've been, but anyway, we'll get to that.
Oh, great. Okay. Of course.
Okay.
He's wonderful.
Okay. Go ahead. Continue. Go ahead. Yeah.
So then these two recombine to create, let us say, the first manifested being of light. And this is what we think of as the Christ, but it was known as Helios or Ra or Inti in the Incan civilization, I-N-T-I, Inti. So there are many names for it, but let us say it's known as the Adam Kadmon, or the perfected being that arose at the beginning of time. The Egyptians called it Nefertum, the firstborn child of creation that embodies within it all of the light of creation. And then, of course, there was a daughter principle. Most people don't know that there's also the daughter, which is the sine wave, the Shekinah, or the Holy Spirit, who is the carrier of the light of her brother and the sound of her, let us say, parents out to the furthest reaches of creation.
There was also the sun energy, too, the daughter and the sun. Right.
Exactly. That was when I said the Christ energy, the Son of God, the daughter of God. Absolutely. Everything comes in complements. Of course, the whole universe is in complements. Male, female, dark, light, all of this stuff.
And that's also the Hebrew tetragrammaton, the Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, father, mother, son, daughter.
And daughter. Yes, perfect. Very insightful. That's so true.
Yeah.
So there are nine of these original beings that were, let us say, derivatives of the one, and they come in order. The one that became then the mother and the father, the daughter and the son, and then the others that followed that have to do with everything from the vibrational fields that help to shape the sacred geometry that allows the world of form to come into being. And that's a longer conversation, but the Council of Nine, or the Nine Silent Ones, you know, have been spoken of in the most hidden and mystic circles by mystics and masters throughout the centuries. And as you know, these are the beings who are my teachers and have been for over 30 years. So then we have the creation of the angelic orders, and there are nine of those orders as well. And those orders begin, each one of the orders has a job, and they work specifically within certain principles. For example, the first three principles of God are love, sound, and light. So the first three orders of the angels represent the thrones, or the divine bhakti energy of unconditional love, service, and devotion. So these beings are the beings that inhabit suns, and they sacrifice their lives in every moment to be reborn in the next moment in order to share their light with the world, so that there may be planets that have suns, so life can even exist. Then you have the seraphim that are like the tone makers, that are literally singing at the vibrational frequencies that allow the dimensions to be created. And then you have the cherubim, which are anything but fat, pudgy little babies with wings. They're literally beings that convert the sound into the visible light spectrum. So this is just, you know, the first of the first three.
Oh, I see. So, in a way, you're saying there's this physical manifestation of the universe, and then there's the energetic spiritual mechanics that sort of
exactly.
Run.
But they're sentient, intelligent beings that are fully aligned with the divine will. They're in service to the divine will. They have individuation, but they don't have ego.
Right.
And
no,
so
but yeah, I'm listening. But I just also want to get back to the point of what is happening now. Everything is being upgraded to the next level, would you say?
Yeah, everything is being, that's a very good way of putting it. And, you know, when we, in the Tree of Life, they talk about the fact that there are four major levels. The higher, what we would call, if you imagine, for example, as you know, I'm a student of the Viragi Masters, and they talk about 12-dimensional levels, and the higher angelic worlds would be 12, 11, 10, 9, and 8. Within the Kabbalah, this would be called the worlds of emanation, from which all of these beings come that I'm describing. And then the sixth and seventh dimension, where we start to get into the first, you know, duality that allows time-space to happen in any way, shape, or form, those worlds would be called the worlds of creation. The fifth and fourth dimension, which were their masters and their homes and their people, and people get married and they can live for thousands or millions of years, but they're at a much higher frequency than we are. Within the Kabbalah, these would be called the worlds of formation. And our
I just want to say about each of those worlds, it's not just a name, but it's actually a whole shift of the way we cognize reality, and that's what I'm really into. It's not like, it's like you see a big picture, you see different qualities of dimensionality as consciousness rises to the more sophisticated or expanded levels.
I think that's very well said. And in fact, the ancients talk about the fact that here in the world of action, the last world, the third dimension, there are 48 laws of reality that must be obeyed unless you really know how to transcend them. But if you go up one level to the fourth dimension, there are only 24 of these laws. So as you say, the way that we cognize reality, the way that we perceive it, the way we move through it is very different. For example, telepathy is business as usual in the fourth. In the fifth dimension, where there are only 12 of these laws, we can think where we want to be and literally teleport to wherever we wish. We can take any form that we wish. We can change our shape. So our interactions obviously become easier on one hand because we're not as limited, and on the other, we have to be more and more self-responsible because a negative thought can produce a negative action.
Right. And also, yes, absolutely. Also, the modalities of time change. And you know, time is not linear in these other levels. It's more circular or happening all at once. Things like that. But that's the subtleties of these dimensions.
You're absolutely right. And so when we start looking at how this is, how this becomes practical, how it affects us now, what we can say about the science is that we can observe that as we cross this galactic equator, basically all the planets in this solar system are going to have a pole reversal. This has already happened on Uranus and Neptune. On Jupiter, the red spot is now spinning the opposite direction. On Saturn and Mars, the poles are melting. You can literally see it in NASA photographs. And, of course, on Earth, the poles are melting. And this is because the magnetic magma whirl within our planet that normally moves in a clockwise direction has now reversed and is now moving counterclockwise. And this tells us that this is actually what will ultimately happen for our planet.
Well, that also fits in with the whole theory, and I think Greg Braden was talking about this recently, how global warming, it may be contributed by man-made fossil fuels, but it's also a solar event and maybe a galactic event. So all these planets are heating up because of what's being activated in the sun and in the great central sun and in the local galactic cluster. So
It's totally true. And on top of that, you have other things. For example, there's the return of the planet Nibiru. And most of us don't know a thing about Nibiru because, of course, you know, we weren't taught about it in high school and it's not on the nightly news, although it should be. But if we go back.
Although it is on Coast to Coast, which is my nightly news. So anyway.
Yes. I've been on Coast to Coast many times and I've gotten to talk about Nibiru a little bit on those.
What is happening? Is it actually coming? Where is it? And when is it coming?
Well, it's here. It's
where?
Here. So let me just kind of make some clarity for those that don't know. In 1820 and 1830, there was a city called Nineveh that was discovered in Iraq. I think it's Iraq, not Iran. And as they unearthed these incredible ruins, they discovered some 22,000 cuneiform texts that go back like 6,000, BC, and they discovered that these texts tell a story of a race of very tall, long-lived beings. These are the beings that we would call the gods or the goddesses, and that's with a little g, that were the civilization makers for humanity, who basically taught us everything from agriculture, animal husbandry, medicine, herbs, law, mathematics, sacred geometry, architecture, all of these great civilizing foundational arts and sciences. And that basically the story they tell is that they came to our planet a very long time ago. They were here because they had a problem with their own atmosphere, with cosmic radiation, and they were mining gold in order to try to get the raw materials to prevent that cosmic radiation. And that basically their own people rebelled because it was such difficult work. And that about 200,000 years ago, they took an earlier version of man, who was probably Cro-Magnon man, jump-started his DNA, and voila, we have Homo sapiens sapiens, which is actually what the anthropological table tells us, is that Homo sapiens sapiens goes back about 200,000 years. So,
and this, a lot of this work is from the studies of Zachariah Sitchin.
Yeah, Zachariah Sitchin was an incredible historian and researcher and a superb writer who wrote a series of 10 books called The Earth Chronicles. And, of course, he died in October of 2010. And, actually, I was on a program, you know, because I knew him, you know, honoring his work. But he very courageously in 1975 began to publish. He was one of about 10,000 people that could read these cuneiform texts. And he took a look at what they said, and then he compared it to what we've discovered with our science today. And lo and behold, he discovered that they knew about Uranus and Neptune and Pluto and all these outer planets that we didn't know they knew about, because we can't see them with the naked eye. He discovered that many of the things that they reported were now scientifically verifiable. And, of course, the question becomes, unless this story was true, that some spacefaring beings who had this knowledge came to Earth and conveyed it to the priest of the time, how in the world would they have this knowledge? And so part of what these Sumerian cuneiform texts said is that basically the planet that they live on goes between our sun and another sun, which is a dark star that they called Solaris. And we kind of call it Nemesis, at least in theory, because the outer planet perturbations have told us that there is something like that out there. And since 85% of all stars are binary stars, we know that the likelihood of us being a binary star is pretty high. But since we can't find the star, it would have to be a dark star. So they said that this was a pulsar, basically, and that this planet was the fairy, F-E-R-R-Y, planet that went back and forth between the two suns. And so this happened every 3,600 years, which, of course, is a very long period of time for us, but for them is only 1 year. So
wait,
if we live 100 years.
Have we actually, so let me just try to get, so you're saying there's a planet that's a dark planet that moves between our sun and another star, maybe Sirius or something.
It's not a dark planet. It moves between our sun and another sun that is a dark star. That other sun they called Solaris, and they said that it was like a pulsar star. In other words, it had once been a bigger star, but then it contracted into itself, and so we can't see it like a bright star with the naked eye, but it still has a strong gravity field.
So where is Nibiru at this point within, you know, the sky, and have telescopes seen it?
Well, we begin seeing it from Australia, where we have the largest radio telescope observatory in the world, in Antarctica, in spring of 2009. It was first sighted in 1983, and at that time there was a whole article in the Washington Post that talked about a Jupiter or larger Jupiter-sized planet that they were seeing on the outskirts of our solar system. Well, obviously, they kept an eye on it as it came in, and it took many, many years to come in. But it doesn't just come in on the flat plate of the ecliptic. It comes from the southern hemisphere. And it passes at a 33-degree angle from the south to the north. So from spring of 2009 to about spring or summer of 2011, very slowly you could see all sorts of photographs and video being taken in Antarctica, in Australia, in India, in Russia, and then it moved up to Devon, England, New York City, and the last ones that I saw that were taken from Norway. Now, It's now vanished from sight. You could not see it, by the way, during normal daylight hours. You could only see it at sunrise or sunset, where it was being, or the light from the sun was being reflected on it.
And now, if somebody wanted to look this up, what would they look up to see pictures of this?
Well, I'll be showing pictures of this weekend in the Meta Center. I'll be showing video, mind-blowing images that will just, like, make your, you know, head reel. Because it's one thing to hear about this thing in theory. It's another to see it with your naked eye. And there's a lot of people who've been tracking this. And some people who had no idea what this was, they would say, what the heck is this? I mean, I've got videos of it. It looks like a second sun. And in fact, it got closer and closer. When it first appeared, you know, around Australia, it was maybe a quarter of the size of the sun relative to what we were seeing. And it was on the back side of the sun, but you'd see clear separation between the sun and it. But over the course of 2 years, literally, it got to be the same size. There were news broadcasts in China with the two suns side by side. And they were saying, what is this?
So, what kind of effect did this have on the planet? Because it came and it went.
Well, let me say exactly what happened. It created the solar mass activity, the solar flare activity that created the great tsunamis of 2004, of 2008, and 9, and 10, and 11. This whole group of huge earthquakes in Chile that were like 8.7, the ones that were over in India. This whole Pacific Rim area, it was really responsible for what happens is when a planet that size comes into our orbit, the reason, for example, that we have 11.6-year solar cycles is because Jupiter goes around the sun every 11.6 to 12 years. So as Jupiter gets closer to the sun, since it's such a large body, the magnetic field between Jupiter and the sun creates solar flares. And that's why we have a 12-year solar cycle, or 11 or 12-year solar cycle for the sun. So imagine Nibiru, who we are now thinking is larger than Jupiter. It was creating huge solar flares, and then those electromagnetic fields were coming down, striking the water, going down into the magma of the Earth, creating crustal displacement, creating earthquakes, and then creating tsunamis.
But wait, it's so weird that since if it was that big, it wasn't on the front page of the news. I mean, how did
In some countries it was, Alan. You know, in America, we have a pretty big cover-up. But, I mean, I have a video of literally the Chinese showing it on their nightly news and going, what the heck is this?
Yeah, I believe you.
But well, so anyway, what happens is it goes around and it's now we can't see it now. It's now going to what's called the perihelion. The perihelion is the point where it's kind of like it comes up in a big loop from below the Earth, from, let's say, south to going north at a diagonal. And then it goes around, and then it returns. Where we could be in trouble in terms of Earth changes is when it returns. And nobody knows exactly when that will be. For my money, I think we're looking at 2017.
But the other question is, what effect did this thing have on consciousness?
Well, that's a very good question. On one hand, if you notice, let's say in the movies, we're having a lot of movies, you know, Percy Jackson and the Gods, Wrath of the Titans. There's all this rash of movies that's come out about superheroes, people with special powers, from, you know, heroes to X-Men. You know, there's a whole rash of consciousness about people waking up to the fact that perhaps there are some kind of changes going on with the human species or the human race, and then the whole question of, you know, the gods. And, of course, we're doing it in classic Hollywood fashion, so we're not really explaining anything as much as we are entertaining. But I think what it's doing is it's opening up the whole question of what is our potential? What is our human potential? What is dormant in our DNA or even in our brain if we only use 7 to 10% on a good day? What would happen if we use 15 or 20%? What would life be like?
And that is what is now coming into this new time. So what you're saying here is Nibiru, that the alignment of the galactic center, the precession of the equinox, the movement within the plane, the solar galactic plane, as the sun moves to the even and then above the equator, are all working in a sense in harmony
together.
And then activating, I would say, an unknown potential within the human being that we have yet to see before on this planet.
I think that that's absolutely true. And, you know, I felt so strongly about this from all the evidence that I have seen and my own experiences that this summer I taught a 9-week class on it, and there were 3 hours each class, and they ran the gamut from the science behind it to the appearance of all sorts of unusual beings, from mer people to little creatures you can hold in your hand that are now showing up on the planet, beings of, let us say, legend, and that we are now discovering are actually real, because we have what's called the merger of the planes at this point, where we have second dimensional beings appearing, fourth and fifth dimensional beings all appearing in Middle Earth, and we are Middle Earth, Midgard as the Norse called it. And so it's a very exciting time to be alive, and then of course when we start talking about this gamut, I did a whole series on what's going on with the star beings and the UFOs and the Elder Brothers, how this is connected to the light codes of ascension. And so on Friday night at the New York Medicine Center, I'm going to be speaking and, of course, showing incredible images about the cycles of time and the mechanisms and the miracles behind this. And then on Sunday, I'll actually be doing 3 presentations in the course of a day, which will run the gamut from prophecies to UFOs, star beings, mermaids, extraterrestrial beings, dragons, to the light codes of ascension, also the science behind the changes in the solar system. So it's going to be, I mean, trying to pack a 9-week class, 27 hours into basically, gosh, about 12 hours is going to be a little challenging, but I know those New Yorkers can keep up. They're really smart.
Yes, no, and thank you for doing this amazing research, and I know you're also going to be down in the Yucatan, and I'll probably see you down there as well. I'll be down there with J.J. Hertog at the Cancun, but we might stop by the Synthesis Festival that's happening.
Well, you know, actually, I'm getting in on the 18th and going to be in Cancun the 18th and 19th,
I'll
and then I'll go to the Synthesis
2020. I'm getting in on the 18th, too.
I'm sorry, what?
I'm getting in on the 18th, too.
Well, you know, we should talk on the phone and coordinate, because I'm spending about a day and a half in Cancun before leaving to speak at this amazing Synthesis 2012 at Chichen Itza, which is, I'm one of the keynotes for that, but this is actually the platform conference that the Mayan elders are going to use to deliver their message to the world. So it should be this incredible time, and I'm so thrilled you're going to be there. Of course, Alan, you're always turn up in the most amazing things. We meet in England and France and Poland and Italy and
California.
You know, it's I love
but
that.
Let me just like get back to the 21st, and because I think this is really, you know, you've laid out a huge scenario of potentialities and shifting of the Earth's cycles and consciousness, and we're moving into a new time. So do you think anything's going to happen on the 21st? I do think we'll have an opening of a collective consciousness, but what do you think is going to happen?
Well, you know, in truth, I think that we are in the mysteries, and no one really knows. And for my money, as far as I'm concerned, I'd love it if we were just all linked up together singing Kumbaya. Because I think the more of us that can raise our consciousness and unify it, the more it will support the Earth in making the shift and help people to make the shift as well. And as you know, people are very challenged right now. There are people going through dizzy spells, waking up in the middle of the night, having a hard time sleeping, needing to sleep
all
the time.
I'm having a hard time sleeping.
Well, these are the energies that are coming in, and what's happening is it's triggering a lot of people's old issues, and it's because it's graduation. It's the end of a year in high school, a 26,000-year cycle, where we get an opportunity to graduate, and so, of course, loved ones, soulmates, twin flames are getting to meet and reunite. People we haven't resolved karma with are coming into our lives for us to clear up our karma and to basically live in a more forgiving, loving, unified consciousness. That's really the only way out of it. It's what Christ talked about, which is, love is the key, basically. I mean,
right,
we've heard it a million times, but do we practice it?
But also, I think you just lay, yes, of course, and that's like, just gets us to like, to the ground level playing field, love. So, because I think what you've laid out for the audience here is a grand scenario of linking into another level that we have yet to really fully understand, but something, we are becoming a new species in essence. If you take that story of light passing through one thing and giving information that changes the DNA, if this pulse that's coming from the center of the galaxy is passing through the consciousness of all these evolved beings and implanting within the shifting DNA or the 12-strand DNA, which is embedded in a place that is not so apparent to science, we start to wake up, perhaps even on December 22nd, as a new race of beings.
I think that is really entirely possible. There are certainly many scenarios about how it could play out. Let us say in the most dire, it would wind up being a pole shift or it would wind up being a solar mass ejection. But I don't think that is necessarily what's going to happen. I think that we are going to have a pole shift sometime in our lifetime, but we have a window for that to happen. And that may be really triggered when Nibiru comes back, because when our magnetic field poles are unstable, obviously a planet that's, let's say, comparatively the size of a basketball to the size of a marble would be like a big semi-truck, driving by a skateboarder. And since the semi-truck is going counterclockwise and we are going clockwise, it could actually stop the rotation of Earth and spin us back the other way. And as far-fetched, crazy
wait,
as this sounds,
if I
can just finish my thought.
Oh, okay.
There is a historical precedent for this, where in China there were 3 days of light, and in South America there were 3 days of darkness. And even in the Old Testament, there, according to one of the books in the Old Testament, the sun stood still in the sky for 3 days. There's a lot. I'll actually talk about a lot of the historic evidence behind this. But I don't think that that's what's going to happen this year. I think that that's some years away when Nibiru returns.
Velikovsky did mention something like that in his book Worlds in Collision, and the whole shift from a 360-day calendar to 365 and a quarter-day calendar happened because of one of these intersections with some great body out there. So, who knows? And, of course, there used to be life on Mars. I mean, it seems like there were atmospheres and water and oceans. Something just came along and pulled those oceans and atmosphere away from that planet. I mean, we may never
know. According to the Sumerian cuneiform text, Nibiru passed through and its gravity field destroyed the planet Tiamat. Some call it Maldek, but the same thing, where the asteroid belt is now. And as it was destroyed, there were great chunks that flew off, and one of them hit Mars. And since Mars is not as large as Earth, it's about a quarter the size of Earth, it began to leak oxygen, and slowly over a very long period of, several hundred thousand years, it lost its oceans and most of its atmosphere. So I think you're absolutely right. It was a totally inhabitable planet, but it just did not survive the destruction of that other planet.
So let's go back to, like, I think the positive times that are coming, because because I feel it's a time where we're moving out of darkness, where we've been so dense in matter and materiality and war, like you said, that it can only get better from here in a way. What do you see with all the things you've laid out, the sort of utopian scenario that's possible for Earth?
Well, I would say this, that what history tells us is that when we move above the galactic equator, we go into a much more of a golden age, that the consciousness awakens, that the divine feminine is honored. When we drop below the galactic equator, the male Christ comes in to help us through the darkness, because the male in his most exalted form is the way shower. He's the light of the world. He's the one who brings light and consciousness to others and says, you can lead in a peaceful manner. The feminine energy, the goddess energy, which we know is beginning to reemerge on this planet, is the female Christ that comes in when we move to the other side. And let me just say, I believe these beings come together, because if you look at Jesus, he came with Mary, his mother, and he came with Mary the Magdalene. And so he's usually flanked by the two expressions of the mother and the daughter. And I'm sure that when the female Christ energy comes in, she is probably supported by the male. Mm-hmm. So I think that one of the things that I talk about that's so insightful about in my Jesus book, about the lost years of Jesus and the secret schools of initiation and the great mystery schools and what he taught and what they taught, is that there's an existence of these four sons of God, if you will, that are known as the four great Kumaras. They're spoken of in the Indian Vedas. And they are said to be incarnations of the Divine Father. And, of course, Jesus was one of these. But there have been others, including Thoth, the god of wisdom, who was known in the Mayan area as Quetzalcoatl. Mm-hmm. And then we
have... you have a good connection to Thoth. I know. I'm just saying.
Thoth is awesome. Thoth is just awesome. I love him. And there are four of these beings, and they're each extraordinary. And I talk about them in the book on Jesus. And anybody who's interested in this can actually go to my website, and I've got some articles on it, and certainly you'll find the two books, Dialogues with the Angels, which I've just come out with a fourth edition, by the way, with about 100 added pages and 30 illustrations.
Do you still have my chapter in there? Trish.
Pardon?
Do you still have my chapter in the Dialogues
with Alan, I could never take out your chapter. You're amazing, and, you know,
well,
I just
thank you for writing
you,
it.
And
Trisha wrote a little... what was it? A little adventure we had in that book where one of the beings she was channeling, I showed evidence for that in a Carlos Castaneda book, and so there's a whole chapter about that dialogue, which was
very, very insightful, because at that time I was very much on the quest to discover who this incredible divine presence that had eagle energy attached to him, who it was. And you know, when you showed me Castaneda's eagle, and the Yaqui version of reality is that they believe that God is an eagle, or he appears as an eagle, rather, and that he's recirculating the light of the universe, the light of consciousness. And this is what I think happens. It's important for our listeners to realize we don't die. I mean, we are immortal. We are flames in the body of God, or drops in the mighty ocean. We don't die. The soul does not perish. We come from life to life, dimension to dimension, planet to planet. And each time we return, we have an opportunity to bring love, to heal all wounds, to share with others, and to join in a song of celebration that helps to celebrate the earth and all living things on her. And that's what I really hope.
Beautiful, Tricia, that was very beautiful. Thank you for that. That's very nice.
That's how I hold this December 21st, 2012. I think that's the state of consciousness as many people all over the world can be in, is in unity and the sacredness of life. and gratitude for the Mother Earth who has given us a wonderful place to live.
Right. That's beautiful. So, yes, you'll be laying out the whole scenario this weekend, November 30th and then December 1st at the Meta Center. That's 214 West 29th Street. I mean, we could talk for hours and hours, couldn't we?
Totally. And let me say, anyone who's interested in coming to my website, sorry I haven't updated the schedule. I've actually been on the road speaking, but it is www.trishamcannonspeaks.com, and that's the T-R-I-C-I-A. And then McCannon, just like it sounds, M-C-C-A-N-N-O-N, speaks.com. By all means, please check it out. And sorry if I haven't updated the schedule, but come to the Meta Center anyway. Well, and do you want to give out Andy's phone number?
Yeah, you can give Andy's phone number out to these people. They're all friends.
Okay, I'll have to grab it. I thought you might have
I do have it. Let me just see. I do have Andy Kane, who's coordinating the activities for Trisha in New York. His number is 212-222-5432. Tell him that you want to come to Friday night and, of course, all day Sunday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Trisha will be downloading her. You know, it's really been 30 years or more of collecting this information, integrating it into a way that it makes sense and giving it to people so it's not just information, but it helps open up their consciousness and evolves them to being more expanded people. That's what I say about your work.
Thank you so much. You know, you've been there
with me every step of the way.
Even though sometimes we don't see each other for a year or two. Mm-hmm. I'm profoundly grateful for the quest and the journey that we've had a chance to be on together, and I so look forward to seeing you when I come to New York.
Yeah, no, I'll see you there for sure on Thursday and Friday and Saturday and Sunday. But you know, I just wanted to say to you also that the people don't understand getting back to the science, the galactic physics. So I always wondered, why is the galactic plane flat? Why is there an elliptic orbit where all the planets travel pretty much on the same path around the sun? And it wasn't until you introduced me to the work of Nassim Harmin that it all makes sense, or made sense.
Yeah, he's wonderful. I really like Nassim, and I think he's kind of a Nikola Tesla of our age.
He discovered what no physicist could explain before, why the galaxy is flat, basically pretty flat.
And what did he say?
No, it's his black hole physics. He talks about the force going inward and the force going outward, creating a flattening at the center there. So he says it's that point of singularity flattens things out.
You know, this is very interesting because what the ancient Vedas and the Brahmins from the Far East tell us is that there's an in-breath of God and an out-breath. And in the out-breath, the created universe comes into manifestation. And then the in-breath, everything is brought back into a place of stillness. And so that is the symbol, of course, for infinity. Mm-hmm. And if we believe one of those seven hermetic laws, that as above, so below, and as below, so above, how do we exist and have our being? We breathe in, we breathe out. We breathe in, we breathe out. Mm-hmm. So it's all a reflection. The atoms, the solar systems, the galaxies, and the divine within us, the inner constellation of the complexity of who we are as souls, and in the end, the simplicity of who we are, which is divine sparks in the body of God.
Right. No, that's good. So these are metaphorically represented within the world and the galaxies and the planets that we see out there. They're all symbolic representations of the soul's inner journey. That's what the world is about.
They're self-reflective, really. It's like, what's the inner wisdom of the mysteries? And as you know, I've been teaching a mystery school here in Atlanta for 7 years called the Phoenix Fire Lodge, the Order of the Eagle and the Dove, or the Divine Father and Mother energies. And I've just actually finished, over the last 18 months, 12 100 to 180 page online courses that people can take in the first year of study. They're not even up online on my website. I have a new website coming. But anyone who is interested can email me, and I'm happy to send them the Introduction to the Mysteries, which is about a 65-page PDF file with gorgeous images and beautiful type that kind of gives you an overview of the 12 courses and sort of how the masters taught and how this wisdom is returning to the planet today. Mm-hmm. So if they want to email me at TrishaMcCannonSpeaks@yahoo.com, or you can find an email on my website, please feel free to, and just, you know, ask me to send you the Intro to the Mysteries, and it's free. I'm happy to do it. But this wisdom is actually all taught by certain masters that have come to our planet, and Thoth is one of the most exciting, particularly for now, because he was a huge advocate for mankind, even though he was one of the Anunnaki gods. In fact, 100 years after Jesus, at the Library of Alexandria, in the city of Alexandria, one of the early Christian church fathers, Clement of Alexandria, said that the entire sum of all wisdom is written in 42 books that were written by the god Thoth, or the Lord of Wisdom, Thoth, that were contained within the Library of Alexandria.
Well, did those become the Hermetic texts as well, those books?
I'm sorry?
Did those books of Thoth become the Hermetic texts?
They were the basis, yes, for the Hermetic texts and for the Hermetica, for the Kabbalion. But today we only have about 4 works that were still written by him, because the library with 700,000 scrolls was burned first by the Christians and then by the Arabs. And so we sort of had a historical lobotomy. Because
my theory about that is those scribes, and I think I was one of them, encoded in those writings that wisdom on a kind of psychic DNA level, so that wisdom wasn't completely lost, and it's coming back to the world and anyone who was a scribe in those lifetimes of the Library of Alexandria. So, you know, the wisdom still remains somewhere within the collective consciousness of the race. So
I think that this is one of the places that you and I connect from. You know, as you and I both know, we have had a lot of lifetimes in Egypt, and I think both of us were in Alexandria, and as you know, I told you we had a life where I was, you were my chief counselor when I got to have a royal life. So, you know, once again, you know, here we are doing this work of bringing forth wisdom back to our age.
So just to wrap up, Trish, what do you think, I know you've been collecting this work for 30 years. What is the most amazing thing? What was the most aha moment in this career of research, really, that you've had?
Gosh, you know, there are many answers to that. Certainly, I would say that meeting Rigel and Auriel were the pivotal changing moments, because when you meet profound beings that are all pervasive through the universe, who have the ability to see through every molecule of your being and to love you unconditionally, in full light and full knowledge, it transforms you. Mm. It's hard sometimes to stand in that level of light, because it misses nothing. And the divine God force, God, or the goddess, or the divine in all in its highest forms, sees all things and loves all things.
So just tell people who Rigel and Auriel are.
Pardon?
Just tell people who you feel these beings are. Who are these beings that appear to you?
Right. Some 30 years ago, I had a great desire to meet my own guides. And this is years after I had been doing readings for people, tracking them through, you know, thousands of years of time, and then off planet, and then up into their higher angelic origins. I mean, all of this. And I never even thought who my guides were. And someone asked me, and I thought, oh my gosh, I see everyone else's guides, but I have no idea. I mean, I've been working with the Viragi masters for many, many years, so I considered them to be my teachers and my guides. So I began a process to really go very deep within to encounter them. And I talk about this in my book, Dialogues with the Angels. And what happened just completely, you know, blew me out of the water. I found myself before a very profound being that I knew that I had known since the beginning of time, who, but I had forgotten the being. You know, down here in the mortal world, we get amnesia. And just standing in this being's presence of unconditional love and knowing transformed me. And that was a being called Rigel. And I had no idea who he was at the time in the biggest scheme of things, but he told me that he was the intelligence and the wisdom and the omnipresence behind the universe who stood for truth. And so then there was a divine feminine form who was not very solid. She was all golds and pinks and moving vibrational geometric waveform fields. And she told me that she was the heart of the universe, that she was Auriel. She was the heart that beats within each and every one of us. And that, you know, it was really through her that the whole universe was born. And it is through the heart that the universe is born. And so thus began a 30-year journey with these profound beings. And they've really been my teachers. And I have many, 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 many journals of information that they've downloaded to me about everything you can possibly imagine. And the mystery school that I started, I started that because Thoth appeared 3 times in my house. And the third time, you know, every time he asked me to start the school, and I finally said, all right, I would. And so, I feel very blessed in this lifetime to be in a connection and a communication with these profound spiritual teachers.
Well, and, it's not just that, though. It's your evolution. It's not just, I mean, you are evolving and you're merging with these beings in a sense. It's not that you're just fortunate. It's the karmic evolution that you've been on to start to open up your consciousness to start to merge with the greater universal soul. That's what I
That think. Is it. You've said that just so perfectly. That's exactly it, Alan. And it's literally an infusing of their beings. And over decades of working with them, I feel like I'm able to sit within the quiet of that essence and emanate out that frequency, which ultimately is my own higher self.
Right, and I know you don't have to go into it, but I know it hasn't been easy. I know it's been quite a challenge.
Well, you know, all of us are given our challenges, and as they say, we're never given a challenge we can't handle.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so, you know, that's the whole method of teaching down here is to build character and strength and dedication and resourcefulness, mm-hmm. you know, and alignment with the light, alignment with truth, alignment with love, humility, you know, some humbleness, you know, get smacked around enough by the universe. You know, we all get an opportunity to allow our ego to die and for something higher to be born. And that higher is our higher self.
Well, it's who we always are. I mean, some of the great people I've been listening to lately, it's not that we are merging with our higher self. Our higher self is descending to merge with the ego personality and sort of become the embodiment of the divine here on planet Earth.
I love that. Enlightening matter.
Exactly.
And lightning, bringing the light into matter. That is beautifully said.
And that's this time. That, for me, is really what 2012 is about, the enlightening the matter. Because we're in a place, and I think that you laid it out really well, as far as the basic science, you know. You know, you can talk about geography a lot, but you don't get the essence of the countries until you visit there. And so you gave us a kind of overview, and then the consciousness that comes with it is this more spiritual awakening as we move into these different spheres, these different realms as a solar entity. You know, the sun itself and its children, as it travels through space into new neighborhoods, experiences these levels of consciousness that have lied dormant within the human psyche that were probably encoded by the Nibiru when we were seeded to become this. Someone said a cross between the fallen angel and the risen ape. You know, we're somewhere between those polarities, and now it's time.
That's very funny. What a turn of phrase.
Right. So we're here to become more of the angelic realm than the animal realm. But, you know, we're humanity has always been caught between those two polarities. So,
well, if you've noticed in the young adult market, there's all these romances of male angels coming down that are in love with mortal girls. And, you know, if it's not vampires, you know, we got angels. And so, you know, it's all about the immortals loving the mortals. And while, you know, certainly you could say, oh, well, this is the return of the gods and the humans, at a different level, it's what you were talking about, the immortal soul and the mortal ego. And it's the marriage and the fusion between these two that brings us to true mastery.
Is that what Twilight was about, that hit movie now, Twilight?
Well, there's many things Twilight's about, but it's a let us say, an immortal romance between an immortal and a mortal person and an immortal person and it hit a lot of archetypes from, the depth of soulmate, twin flame love, that piece is a very big piece of it, the danger part, the choice between, even if you've been, let us say, turned into a vampire, between acting responsibly and not killing, but honoring your higher nature and choosing to live in peace, even at some sacrifice to yourself. So, I mean, there are a lot of themes that it touched on that I think have touched a lot of people. It's really, you know, great writing, great show, great characters, and authentic. It took the beats to allow the inner selves of the characters to emerge. Instead of just being, you know, rock'em sock'em, roller coaster action.
Right. So what's that implanting within the consciousness of the people watching? What do you feel is being encoded?
Well, I think the overall theme of the book is love. I think that the love that all the characters in there, the boy and the girl have, yes, but then the family that loves the boy, the family that loves the girl, the werewolf family that loves the girl, the people that were once enemies that become friends, the uniting. Over and over again, she's dealing with themes of love and uniting. And I think that, you know, when you're invested in the depth of the characters start off with problems, they're arguing, they're natural enemies, and they resolve it through the power of love and friendship. And that emerges in her stories again and again.
Right. And I think that's actually a reflection of the civilization that we're living in now. You know, we have to overcome the materiality and find that love is the key for why we incarnated in the first place, if you want to put it that way.
It is. And this is one of the things that I've seen, I died and went to the other side, and I had an opportunity in that very profound experience to meet a council of light elders, and totally telepathic, humanoid in shape, but all light, but no features, but just radiant light. And they said, we really see who you are, and we really honor you for all the thousands of people you've helped in your readings and your healings and your teachings and so forth. And I said, well, I'm ready to come home. And they said, well, if you come home now, how about all those other people you said you'd help that you won't be able to help?
Why were you ready to come home?
Well, as you know, there, when you go to the other side, really, the light is so intense and it's so beautiful and it's just such unconditional love on the other side that, there's no reason to fear. I mean, look back not, you know. You know that all the souls that are down here on Earth will eventually find their way It may take them one lifetime or 100 lifetimes, but they will remember who they are. They will awaken to their own divine essence. And so there's nothing to worry about.
No, but I think it's up to us to awaken while we're here. I think that's what this time is about. That's why it's so important.
It is very important. And, you know, you're talking about the light, I think, is very, very important. In the last few months, I've been working with a series of very profound light meditations. It takes you about 10 minutes, really, and I'll be teaching this in the workshop. Actually, it takes about 30 minutes to do the meditation. But once you get it down, you can do it in about 10 minutes, and it really clears karma. It clears problems out of your psyche, and it realigns you with your higher self and lifts everything up. Because I think when these energetic portals and doorways open, I think not trying to get to the door with your bag of boulders from your past karma is very important. Mm-hmm. And the higher frequency we can be, the more opportunity we are to be able to take that journey consciously through to the other side.
Well, I think that's what December 21st is really all about, and that's what all the alignments are. There's a portal, there's an energetic portal that is going to be ignited, especially where we'll be at the Pyramid of Chichen Itza, which is probably the best preserved of the Mayan pyramids, where Quetzalcoatl or Kukulcan descends every spring equinox into the earth, and at the winter solstice, Quetzalcoatl sits at the top of that pyramid because it ascends in the fall, comes down in the spring, so therefore the energies of the plumed serpent are there to rise up humanity, to open this portal, and to have us step through into suddenly, really, the unknown. And that's what I feel is so exciting about this time. We can say it could be like this and like that, but we have to be prepared, as Heraclitus said, to expect the unexpected. And that's nothing to fear. It's something to welcome, because history... And this is what Terence McKenna said about 2012. He says, history will be history. And we break this fractal wave of time, and something else starts to be encoded within the human destiny. So that's what's coming, I feel.
I think that this is very true. And it's an interesting thing because one of the things I'll be talking about on Sunday, this Sunday, is these prophecies. And there are four big groups I've looked at. What did Nostradamus say, and how did we kind of veer off from that since the 1970s, and why? Because I do know how we veered and why, but, you know, he was accurate for a long time. Then what do the Mayans say? What do the Hopi say? And how does this cross-correlate with other scientific and investigative data that gives us sort of a picture of a dimensional shift? And I'll be talking in some real detail about that, as well as how the shift plays into these light codes that we're speaking about.
But what is the dimensional shift? Just give us a little preview here. You know, what is it that's happening?
Well, there's some very interesting theories, and let me just say, it's not like anything that has ever happened before.
Exactly.
According to the Mayan history, because, you know, their pyramidal clock goes back literally billions of years to the microorganisms all the way up through the, you know, the plant kingdom, the animal kingdom, the national level of tribal level of humans, the national, then eventually the global, and then the galactic. And it literally stops. So either the Mayans get completely off the planet and don't come back and don't incarnate, or everyone gets off the planet, or it becomes a different planet. The planet itself morphs.
And I think that's sort of what you were hinting at, with all these cycles coinciding at this point in time. The planet
exactly.
is morphing.
And we do have a lot of cycles. So I think we may even be looking at the return, you know, the my prophecies say 9 star beings will come back, and one of them is a being called Quetzalcoatl, who was associated with 9 winds. Well, I mean, well, Nine Winds, who is associated with Quetzalcoatl. So if that's true, if it's Quetzalcoatl, and if in fact Quetzalcoatl was Thoth, this would be one. Well, of course, the Christians talk about the return of Jesus. The Hopi talk about the return of the great Pahana, the white Pahana, or the true white brother, as opposed to, you know, the white people that came over and destroyed them. And so they all speak about the return of, let us say, these divine or Christed kinds of master teachers. And I think one of the things that's very exciting, I mean, if I were the Mayans, I mean, if I were the Indian, the extraterrestrials or the star gods, I think that this would be a really amazing opportunity to show myself, because you may have 200,000 people or 50,000 people down there.
And, right, you know, and they have seen light coming out of the top of, did you see those photographs that were online of actually like a beam of light being projected into space or down from space to the top of the pyramid there in Chichen Itza?
You have to send me the image. I haven't seen it, no.
Oh, there's actually a video. Someone was there and just happened to catch actually a video of light being pulsed out into space from the top of Chichen Itza.
So it's sent down from space into it?
I have to look at it again. I just saw a light right at the top, and it's captured on film, and said everyone said, what's this? So I'll find that. It's on YouTube. And so, yes, I think this is an opportunity for something to arrive within, as, because it does seem like we've been preparing, and it's a portal in time, and people, and that's a whole other show we'll do about portals in time and space, but there are these doorways. I mean, they've proven that there's these wormholes, so perhaps this is an alignment of some wormhole. We will see.
So you're thinking that this doorway is a wormhole or a stargate.
Possibly.
Or maybe a series of stargates that may open in different places around the planet.
Mm-hmm. Or at least one at Chichen Itza, or maybe a lot of the major sacred sites on the planet. I don't know, but it seems, well, just with the intention of people gathering.
Something. Yes, and I think it could open at many sites. You know, if you look at the geosphere of the planet's surface, it's been described as turtle Earth, because it has 13 major, let us say, tectonic plate. If you divide it into dodecahedrons and all that, Bruce Cathy's done some interesting work with this, where they've broken it into grids. Now, this is all, again, fractal geometry, but what Rigel told me about the galaxy is that our galaxy has 144,000 and then 144 and then 12 major, let us say, time-space intersection points that would be like nodal points, key nodal points in the body of the galaxy. So, for example, with us, the body of us, a big key nodal point would be the heart or the brain, you know, because these are centers where if those they fail, everything fails. And so
I just met another, I just want to tell you to add to that, I just met a Mayan elder who I interviewed who talked about the 13 articulations within the body relating to the Mayan calendar. So what was his name?
Well, I'd love to know more about that, because, of course, the 13th point is always the center. And this is why Jesus picked 12 disciples around one. This is why the Druids had 12 main Druids around a chief Druid, or why the Mithrans had 12 around Mithra. It's the 12 planets, or the 12 archetypes, or the 12 energies around the 13th.
But you know,
and the 13th would be the Christ energy, of course, the one in the center.
Do you know geometrically, if you had 13, like let's say ping pong balls, you could fit 12 touching surfaces around the one in the center. You can fit 12 balls around the one ball. So it's a geometric metaphor
progression
as well.
Yeah, it's like a template. I think that's derives, you know, Metatron's cube, you know, and the Flower of Life was 6 around 1 and then 12 around 1. It's all, you're absolutely right. They're progressional codes that I'm sure are connected with the Golden Mean Spiral and the Fibonacci sequence. So You know, I always love speaking with you, and, you know, it's a shame both of us are so busy we don't do more of it, but it's wonderful to have this kind of an in-depth conversation on a radio show, for heaven's sakes.
Right. So we'll do more this weekend. We should. Yes, I mean, there's a lot to talk about, and we could go on and on. But if you want to see Tricia this weekend in New York City, that's November 30th, 2012, and December 2nd at the Mesa Center, which is 214 West 29th Street on the 16th floor, between 7th and 8th Avenue, you can come or call.
Give Andy's number again, if you wouldn't mind.
Yes. Yes, or call Andy Kane at 212-222-5432. Also, TrishaMcCannonSpeaks.com is your website.
It is indeed. And I also want to say I'm staying over to do just a handful of readings Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday morning. And actually, I only have about four or five openings. So if anyone is interested in scheduling, they can call me at my home number until Wednesday at 404-355-2211. Once I'm in New York, you'll only be able to get me on my cell. And so I'll give this to you for scheduling, but don't call me for any other reason. It's 404-786-9634. That's 404-786-9634. And I only do three readings a day now. They're about 2 hours, but I track people really up to their angelic soul origins and then down through the dimensions and time, and really look at when they came to Earth, what their major themes have been, where are they now in their soul evolution, and, you know, if there are things to clear, like curses or vows or things, erroneous belief systems that are holding them back, you know, we look at how to best go about doing that.
Great. Tricia, thanks for spending some time here and catching up, and we will spend more time this weekend. We'll do more shows, maybe do a television show at some point or a Skype thing on BBS Radio as well, because I think BBS Radio is really a place that sources all these things out into the world. So thank you.
I would love that. And if we can maybe speak in the morning about 10, we can kind of finish up with some of the other things that we were working on. Does that sound good to you?
Yeah, that's good. Thanks. Tricia, I've been talking to Tricia McCannon, who, what would you say, you're a galactic messenger?
I'd say I'm a galactic cosmologist
okay.
and messenger, and it's a pleasure to bring, hopefully, a very positive and uplifting message to everybody this evening. So thanks for having me.
Okay, and I'll talk to you soon. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. And check my website, newrealities.com, where I have lots of really interesting interviews as this time of counting down to transformation is really upon us. It's not the 11th hour. This is the 12th hour. And it's happening. Things are getting more intense. The vibration of interactions are increasing. Everything seems to be building, and it's a venture into the unknown. So thanks for listening to New Realities, and I'm interested in people's feedback and comments. So again, you can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thank you for listening. Thank you, BBS Radio, and we'll be in touch. Thank you.